Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to today's show. I just had a great conversation with Dr. Michelle Druin. And Dr. Druin is a behavioral scientist, an expert on technology, relationships, couples, and sexuality, whose work has been featured or cited in the New York Times, CBS News, CNN, NPR, and other media outlets. She is a professor of psychology at Purdue University and a senior research scientist at the Parkview Miro Center for Research and Innovation. And she has a book coming out called Out of Touch, How to Survive an Intimacy Famine. And that's exactly what we talk about. We talk about what intimacy is, what an intimacy famine is, and the remedies for it. And a lot of it has to do with technology and how it's been introduced into our lives. And Michelle gives us some really great tools on how to use it and embrace it, because a lot of things that I know I see and have implemented is just like digital detox, get the phone away from me. And I think that's important and there's a place for that. But like it or not, it's in our lives, and there's ways that we can use it to connect more with our partner, with our friends, with our family, with our kids. And Michelle gives us some great tools to do that and lots more. So I really enjoyed today's conversation. Hope you guys are having a great day wherever you're listening to this, or evening or night. I really appreciate you tuning in, telling your friends and family about the show, and leaving those 5-star iTunes reviews. That helps us get seen by more people to just give them this information, because I'm just here along for the ride. I get to have interesting conversations and get the tools and information right alongside you. And I'm really thankful for that. So as always, thanks again and enjoy today's show. Hi, Michelle. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start by talking about something that you're really pushing, and I won't say maybe you coined the phrase, but I'm sure other people are using it, but that is intimacy famine, and how we got here, how it shows up, how you're seeing it in real life, and we'll talk about how we can deal with it.
Oh, exciting. Let's dive right in. So first, I do think I coined the phrase. I was really just thinking about where we are in terms of our intimacy, even in our pre-pandemic world. And I thought, we're really in a famine. And I hadn't seen those terms put together before, but I thought it really captured nicely what I feel like I see. And another researcher I was talking to, Justin Garcia, he's the head of the Kinsey Institute. So he does a lot of research with relationships. And he has a book coming out as well in the spring called The Intimate Animal. And I thought it was strange. We hadn't really talked about it, the fact that we both had these books coming out. And I said to him, you know, I saw that you're writing all of this about intimacy. And he said, yes, and you're using the word intimacy famine. I'm going to have to go back and make sure that I put that into my book. And so I thought it was interesting that two researchers who are both studying relationships, and particularly we both also look at technology and its effect on relationships, and we had both come to the same conclusion. But yeah, I think I was the one who coined the phrase first, and I do think that people will start using it because I think other people have noticed the trend.
Well, let's dive in, because intimacy famine does not sound good. I think anything with famine, certainly intimacy. So how is that showing up? Why is that happening? And let's talk about how we can prevent it or heal it.
Sounds good. So first, let's define intimacy. Intimacy, when people think of it, they might jump immediately to sex. They might think that intimacy is about sexual relationships, whether that be just touching or intercourse or whatever variety sex takes place in your mind. But intimacy is a wider concept than just sex. It's intellectual intimacy, social intimacy. It's the exchanges you have with your neighbors, your friends. It's close sharing of who you are with someone else. And that can be physical. It can be affective. It can be emotional. It can be physical, but not sex. So it can be touching, hugging. All of that is intimacy. And I think that my focus on it has really been directed by my research. So for about a decade, I've been looking at the ways technology affects relationships. And I looked at first sexting and whether or not sexting is good for couples or bad for couples, how often it's occurring. But in all of the research that I was doing, I was noticing, you know, we have this intermediary device that's putting kind of a wedge between us and some of the types of intimacy that we could be experiencing in our lives. And when I'm looking out at the world, what I'm noticing is that we have higher rates of loneliness. A lot of people, more than a fifth of the people in the United States, and the results are similar if you look at places like Great Britain, say that they're lonely. We have a lot of social isolation. The more people are online, the lonelier it seems that they are. So there's this kind of inverse relationship between social media use and feelings of loneliness. So we are, in one way, expanding our social networks so that we can touch a lot of different people. But what that means is that we're not deep diving and touching people very deeply. So it's like if you have a pool cover, this is what I thought of last night. It's like you have a pool cover, you know, the ones that are supposed to keep people from falling through a pool. If you throw a bunch of marbles on it, it's not going to penetrate it because you have this big surface that it's going to absorb it. And if you throw a bowling ball onto it, it might get deep enough. And so what I think is all these little interactions that we're having, they're like marbles thrown on a pool cover. They're just dispersing, I think, our social energy. Whereas if you throw a bowling ball, then you have one big concentration of energy. And so by getting these little interactions with a lot of different people, we're missing these big intimate moments with our special, special people.
I love that metaphor. I think you should stick with it. If you just came up with it last night, I think it's great. And yeah, it's relatable and it does seem to be what is happening. So how can we get that bowling ball depth to our relationships?
That's a great question. So I'm not a person who's eschewing technology. In fact, throughout the book, I make it very obvious and an important point that technology is here to stay. It clearly meets social needs and can actually be the solution to some of our social dilemmas. So what I propose is you prioritizing, doing something called social economizing, which is not a term that I coined, but I love it. So you make decisions every day about who to invest your time in, how much time to invest, and whether it be a text message that you send to 20 friends saying, hey, how are you doing? Or one text message you send to your mom or your partner that tells them how much you love them, how you hope they have a really great day. Ask them something deep and meaningful instead of just, hey, how are you? What I think is we can make the choice every day to disperse those energies towards lots of different people and never really make a big splash, or we can dive in deep with the people that we want, and we can do that with or without technology.
I want to talk a little bit about the technology aspect, and I think it's interesting because I did read how you're not vilifying technology and actually that we can use it for positive effects. But part of my struggle personally and just understanding this is I feel like it's such a powerful new tool. Social media is barely 10 years old, and our monkey minds just aren't great at using it responsibly. And so part of what I hear you saying is that, you know, we can use it, but how can we really try not to get sucked into the black hole of Instagram and not do a complete digital detox, but have it in our lives, but constantly be checking that we're doing it responsibly?
Chase, this is the million-dollar question and one that I get asked by everyone I speak to. Parents, people, just anyone who's living a modern life is like, how do I make this so that I'm getting the most out of it and not falling victim to the dangers or the time wastes? And the answer is really just a prioritization. I think that you said it, and I think it probably captures it well. You said we have these monkey minds. they've done a very good job, tech companies, for making our phones very appealing. They're appealing even to babies. They made them very appealing to us. They've gamified everything. They have these bids for our attention through the alerts that we get, whether they pop up as visual alerts. I always have my phone on silent. I don't know about you, Chase, but do you have it on?
Do you hear things? Especially now, but most of the time I have it on silent and I don't really have many notifications at all.
Okay, so that's good. So I think one way that we can stop responding to the bids of attention that our phone is giving us, because what I will say is our phone, yeah, it's this, you know, piece of metal and plastic and, you know, all these little parts, but actually what it represents is our deepest social network. I mean, I understand why people are addicted to their phones. Everyone that you love, you are connected to through your phone. So you're not just attending to your phone or attending to your social networking site. You're actually attending to the people who you love most in this world, the people who you are connected to most. So your want to look at those things is totally natural. We want to feel like we belong. We want to feel loved. We want to give our love to other people. We want to feel right above like having water and feeling a sense of security. We want to feel connected to others. So totally normal. If we want to pay more attention to the people who are in our immediate space, then what we do is turn those notifications off. Like you said, you've already done. You have options. Do you want the notifications to pop up? Then put them on. If you don't, then turn them off. You can actually silence your notifications. I mean, the tech companies also know that this is something that people are coping with. So they've built in these features that allow us to turn off those notifications. We can silence our phones for parts of the evening. But better yet, you can even just put your phone in a totally different place. When I want to tell my family that I am here for them, so I know you have a daughter by listening to past episodes. How old is your daughter, Chase?
6.
Okay. So I have a 12-year-old, nearly 12, and a son who just turned 14 yesterday. And they need me far less than they did when they were 6. But they still need me. And more than that, they need for me to set a model of how do I interact with the people who are in my home. And so we have rules around technology. We put our phones in our bedrooms at night. We turn them off. The kids are not allowed to have them when they go to sleep. During mealtimes, we are not allowed to have phones anywhere near the dinner table. We eat dinner together as a family. During short car rides, you know, to and from maybe their hockey practices, they are not allowed to use their phones. So we are all attentive to each other in some sacred times and sacred spaces. So it's about prioritization. You know, for some people, they're going to prioritize the alerts on their phone because maybe it's a time in their life. Let's say, for example, your parent was sick, Chase. You know, you would want to keep your alerts on because you want to make sure you're getting all the information about that parent. So there'll be times in our lives when that phone is the most important being. But when it isn't, then use that power to put it away, turn it off, silence it, whatever you need to do to create the space you need for the people who are right there.
I want to go back to something you said you were doing some research on a few years ago, and that is sexting and how it affects relationships. Could you share a little bit about what you guys found?
Yeah, and I mean, maybe I misspoke a little bit by saying how it affects relationships. What we were really looking at is just how it relates to other parts of relationships. And this is what we found. I mean, generally, the closer people are, the more likely they are to send sext messages to each other. And among couples who sext a lot, they do tend to have higher sexual satisfaction. So that makes sense, right? If they're sexting each other, then they're going to maybe have a stronger sexual relationship. But we also found there are a bunch of negative correlates. So people who are sexting the most were more likely to be ambivalent in their relationship, meaning they were unsure whether they wanted to stay or go. They also had more arguments about technology. They were also more likely to be viewing pornography. They were more likely to have different types of couple conflict. So although we do see this relationship between sexting and a higher level of sexual satisfaction, other parts of the relationship are not as great. Now, we have seen people propose that if you do like a sexting intervention with a couple, maybe it'll bring them closer. But I actually haven't seen any research showing that. So the effects of sexting on a relationship, if experimentally manipulated, it's a study that hasn't been done. And I myself would like to see what the results would be, but I'm just not sure.
Yeah. And certainly one is probably a product of the other. Like if you have a good sex life and there's good sexual chemistry, you might be more inclined to sex with your partner. And
exactly.
It's like a chicken and the egg thing. I don't think you're going to, but that could be a thing that, you know, I've encouraged listeners in the past through our conversations with guests is like trying something new. So maybe you've never sent a suggestive text to your partner. And that might be something, you know, like if it's you guys have a date night planned, to put that out there as something new and novel. It could be additive.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Foria. Better sex starts with Foria. People may not think they need that little extra help in the bedroom, but I was pleasantly surprised by how much better and more pleasurable my sexual experiences are when I use Foria. Foria is using all natural and plant-based ingredients to intensify sexual pleasure and relieve discomfort. Foria makes products that will transform your sexual pleasure. Foria's products are made to help women and people with vulvas fully experience their sexual pleasure, from heightened orgasms to more sexual comfort. Foria's bestseller, the Awaken Arousal Oil, is the ultimate pleasure pregame. The Arousal Awaken Oil is like a juicy warm-up that helps you get really turned on, increasing your pleasure and deepening your orgasms with a partner or even solo. Awaken uses CBD and warming, sensation-inducing organic botanicals that enhance arousal, sensitivity, pleasure, access to orgasms, and helps relieve any discomfort. Best of all, Awaken just turns you on. And my favorite combo is to use Foria's Awaken Arousal Oil and the Sex Oil for a perfect combo for peak pleasure. So yes, you have my permission to try this. I fully endorse you to go ahead and treat yourself to more deeper, fuller pleasure whenever you can find it, as often as possible, and you can start with a bottle of Foria. Foria is offering a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/IDO or use the code IDO at checkout. That's Foria, F-O-R-I-A, wellness.com/IDO for 20% off your first order. I recommend trying their Awaken Arousal Oil and their Sex Oil. You will thank me later. Today's episode is also brought to you by Field. Are you searching for a dating app that actually encourages you to embrace your sexual side? Whether you're single and searching for a new connection or in a relationship and looking to spice things up with a third, you need to check out Field. Field is an alternative dating app for couples and singles. As the largest dating community of progressive humans across the globe, Field connects the curious and the open-minded. Field has built a community for awesome, ethical, and honest people and aim to create a world where everyone can explore their desires without judgment and design the relationship they want. The app is inclusive to all, no matter your gender or orientation. When you join, you can choose from more than 20 sexual and gender identity options. Field values sex positivity and encourages you to share your desires and interests directly on your profile so that people know what you're into. From cuddling and long kisses to BDSM and shibari, you can be open from the beginning and connect with like-minded humans in a space created for safe and ethical exploration. Since the pandemic, Field members have expressed a radically increased desire to connect on an emotional and cultural level rather than purely a sexual one. With radical open-mindedness designed into the app, you can share freely about your sexuality no matter how traditional or kinky you may be. Nonconformity and shame-free individuality is what Field is all about. And here's some great news. You can download the Field app for free and support our show by using the link in the episode description. Just click the link in our episode and get the Field app for free today. Today's episode is also brought to you by Fabulous. Setting new goals, creating and sticking to healthy habits, building a daily routine you can actually keep, sounds like it should be easy, right? But sometimes it can be really, really hard. So if you're not sure how or where to start, it's time to try Fabulous. It's been a game changer for so many people, including me. Fabulous is a habit-changing app that gives you the tools and skills you need to feel healthier, more productive, and fulfilled. Fabulous helps you break free of negative habits while helping you build new, healthy ones that stick. Fabulous does this by using a holistic approach along with behavioral science. Unlike other health apps, Fabulous focuses on self-improvement, mental and physical health, mindfulness, and productivity to help build daily routines that work for you. By using behavioral science, Fabulous breaks down scientifically proven healthy habits into daily routines with very small tasks that you can easily achieve every single day. Let's say your goal is to be healthier. Fabulous breaks down that goal into daily tasks, like reminding you to drink water, exercise, or even disconnect and unplug from those ever so addicting phones that we have. Fabulous also offers weekly challenges that complement the tasks that I'm already doing into my regular routine. So for example, I did the gratitude challenge, which really helped me show gratitude to the very special people in my life every single day. And it has made me become much more mindful of how appreciative I am for their friendship every day. Becoming a Fabulous Premium member is also a total game changer. Premium gives you access to daily coaching content sessions, unlocks all guided behavioral change programs, and lets you add as many habits as you like to your routine. So I'm loving the daily reminder to drink more water, to do breathing exercises whenever I'm stressed out. That has helped me so much with my mental health. So start building your ideal daily routine today with Fabulous Premium. Get 25% off Fabulous Premium by going to thefab.co/I do. That's thefab.co/I do for 25% off Fabulous Premium. Thefab.co/I do. Today's episode is also brought to you by Nutrafol. Thousands of women have taken back control of their hair with Nutrafol, with so many users raving that the supplement not only transformed their hair, but restored their confidence too. Nutrafol offers two targeted formulas for women that are clinically shown to improve their growth and thickness with less shedding through all stages of life. So no matter what stage of life you're in, Nutrafol has a solution. Nutrafol Women is ideal if you're experiencing thinning hair caused by stress, dieting, overstyling, and environmental toxins, while Women's Balance is formulated with additional hormone support for those with thinning hair through menopause. Nutrafol is physician formulated to be 100% drug free. They use medical grade botanicals in consistently effective dosages so you get the most reliable results. As Nutrafol's powerful ingredients bring your body back into balance, you might also notice improvements to your overall well-being, including more restful sleep, less stress, and better skin, nails, and libido. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after just 6 months. More than 1,500 top doctors recommend Nutrafol as an effective, high-quality solution for healthier hair. You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support the show by going to Nutrafol.com and entering the promo code IDO to save $15 off your first month's subscription. And this is their best offer anywhere, and it is only available to U.S. customers for a limited time. Plus, free shipping on every order. Get $15 off at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code IDO.
It could be, and it doesn't even have to be new and novel to be additive. I mean, it could be additive even if you do it all the time. even if you're regularly sending your partner sex messages. I will say one thing I've been thinking about a lot, and this relates to the intimacy famine that I see among couples, certainly. And I'm going to say, you know, obviously, I'm actually not a clinician. So I'm a research psychologist. I work at a university. I study relationships. And what that means, not being a clinician, is that I am not a clinician. So when I talk to people, I talk to them as an inquisitive friend and an inquisitive researcher who's always gathering kind of anecdotal data. And I ask people a lot, are you happy? And I do this with very close people as just kind of a general check-in. How are you doing? Are you happy today, this week, this month? And people are pretty willing to open up. People like to talk about themselves. And I don't think a lot of people dive deep in talking to people about relationships, but people know I do, so I'm forgiven. But I've also started asking people who I know only fairly well, are you happy? And I find that a lot of people say that they're missing things in their relationship. And one of the things that has come up recently with a couple of people is sexual spontaneity. They've said, yeah, things are pretty good, but I'm really missing sexual spontaneity. And I think, well, one way to be spontaneous with a partner is instead of sending them a message in the middle of the day, you know, complaining about something at work or telling them about something you need, you could send them a message just telling them how hot you think they are or how, you know, sexy they were last night or how you can't wait for them to get home. And that might be the spontaneous message they need to really feel better about themselves, the relationship, to spark something in you that will actually bring you closer. So I think that there's something to be said about those sex messages being used to communicate a spontaneity that maybe is lacking in a lot of relationships. I've been married for almost 25 years. So I come by this idea of spontaneity very naturally, I think, through time. What about you? How long have you been? Are you married?
No. But I wanted to say that I do love that sexual spontaneity, sending a message, but you could say kindness spontaneity, right? Like,
oh yeah, anything.
Anything, exactly. Because we get so stuck in a rut of just normalcy and the daily habits, and that can be nice and comfortable in a long-term relationship. But sometimes it's nice to just get a text of like, hey, I was just thinking about how grateful I am that you did the dishes last night. And that goes such a long way. So I love that suggestion.
100%. And it's another reason why technology shouldn't be eschewed, because it does give us almost constant contact with the people that we love. And it doesn't have to be only with our romantic partners. We can do that with a friend. We can do that with a loved one. I'm sure my mom, when she receives a random text from me telling her how much I appreciate her, it makes her day, you know? So I think that you're totally onto something. We need to just think about ways to frame our conversations so that they bring light and happiness to the people that we're sending them to. One other thing that I have been thinking about as well is just, you know, we spend a lot of time investing in new relationships, you know, young love, new friendships. We try to be our best and funniest and, you know, brightest selves. But I think over time, we stop showing that side of ourselves to our partners. And I don't know why. That doesn't make any sense. We should be trying ultra hard with our partners. We should try to get them to fall in love with us every day. So don't reserve the best of yourself for the start of a relationship. Make it a daily commitment.
That is a great framework of how to think of things, you know, again, getting outside of that comfort and yeah, putting a little effort into it. These things don't just happen on their own. What are some other tools that people can use that maybe aren't so obvious with technology to create more intimacy?
It depends. So as I said, we have this constant contact. So I don't know what your situation is in terms of work from home or how close you are to your partner on a daily basis, if you have a partner, but my husband works far away. So when he's away, obviously the phone is the way we can contact each other. There are some kind of new technologies that have been invented where you can, you know, wear a bracelet. And when your partner is thinking of you, they press a button and it lights up. Or if you want to even talk in a sexual way, they have underwear that will vibrate when your partner presses a button. So, I mean, they've really started to create these technologies so that people can convey to each other over a distance, hey, I'm thinking of you. I think there's also a lamp. I think it's called like a friendship lamp or something, where if your friend is thinking of you, they can make it pulse a certain color. There's also one, I think, that syncs to your heartbeat so that your partner's heartbeat can be connected to yours, and you can hear your partner's heart beating. All of these things are great, but you don't need that kind of thing. Our words are super valuable. So you can call them, you can text them, you can send them a letter. I mean, you don't even need technology to do it. But I think those are probably the most important ways. I will say too, for couples who are at a distance, whether it's for the day or for a week, for a month, a lot of people say they use video chats and that helps them feel connected to a partner.
The Bluetooth underwear, that's another level of connection. And things like that are only going to become more prevalent. And I guess on that note, as someone who's studying technology and psychology and relationships, I know you take the positive angle for the most part of how we can use it. I tend to be maybe a little more pessimistic because I just feel like it's all so new on the evolutionary scale and we're not good at dealing with it. And that's why I think these conversations are so important, because a big step is just becoming aware of our use. How do you think of just the broader theme of where we're at and where we're going with this technology and relationships?
Chase, I've been thinking about this for years because I'm trained as an experimental psychologist, but my core concentration is developmental psychology. So I've been thinking about how technology affects who we are and who we're becoming, essentially since it arrived on the scene. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm not sure, but technologies get released to market before we've had a chance to study them. And that's a natural progression because we can't study something before people are actually using it. And what happens is, you know, these tech companies, they have these really great innovators. They are constantly trying to improve things, make things more attractive, make things better, make things more streamlined. They release them. And then as researchers, we're trying to catch up. What effect is this having? And I hear your pessimism, and I know that it's reflected in tons of people who I speak to about this issue. They're concerned about their kids. You know, what kind of relationships are they going to have when everything is so distal and very little is proximal? As a very salient example for me, I have two sons in middle school. And when I was in middle school, I was always at parties. There were always parties. Now, I understand that my two sons are in middle school during a pandemic, and that is not a good time for parties for anyone. However, even without the pandemic, they were not going to as many parties. And I thought, why isn't that happening? Why are they not going to big group events with their friends? And I thought, I know why, because they're texting them and they're playing online games with them where they're talking to them at night. And they don't need to see them in person because they have these little drips of social interaction with their friends all the time that I didn't have. I had these humongous drains. I was drenched basically. So there's this drip drench hypothesis that basically says you can understand something or be influenced by something in this giant drench where you get drenched with it, or it can be these small little drips, and these little drips can be just as influential as being drenched in something. So what it made me think is maybe these social interactions that they're getting, what I see as these drips, maybe that's enough. Maybe that's what they need. And maybe that's preparing them for the future that I actually see us heading towards, a more robotic, more AI dominated culture where a lot of people are working from home, relationships are built at a distance. Maybe my children will be better at building relationships and sustaining them at a distance, which they will probably need professionally, and they may need in order to navigate their social lives. So I don't see us going anywhere that's horrible for humankind. What I just think is, for people like me who grew up in a different era, we need to shift our perspective.
And maybe occasionally get drenched, right? Like, obviously, yes. You know, it's a balance. And I love the metaphor again. I was just thinking of your pool metaphor at the start, but that maybe they're just getting all the marbles, but they're not getting that bowling ball. And so, yeah, we're not going to get rid of the internet, cell phones, technology, and there is a lot of value in being able to use that in a productive way, create connection, and find that balance between connecting with friends. I'm thinking of your kids. I'm thinking of Stella as she grows up, being able to do that, but then occasionally knowing that we do need to have that human-to-human in-person contact.
I mean, I think we do. So I did a TED Talk in 2015 that doesn't actually seem to have dated that much, actually. I thought that over years it would lose its meaning, but I still think it's pretty relevant. And in it, when I begin, I talk about meeting my husband. So we met in college and I went up to him in a dining hall. And I went up to this table full of hockey players. I didn't know that at the time. And was pretty much humiliated by one of his friends who said, "You don't know who this is." And I walked away thinking, I just completely blew that. I'm probably never going to talk to that guy again. That was horrible. But one thing it did, Chase, is it took me so much courage to walk up to him. And I don't know if my children will ever have an event like that, because they, first of all, don't ask people out in the same way that we did in 1993. And second of all, I think when I can look at my 14-year-old and the way he navigates his relationships via social media, if one girl says no, he's like, "Oh, on to the next," because they're so accessible. So I have these same concerns, and I didn't even realize that the bowling ball thing actually fed into this drip drench hypothesis, but you're completely right. It really does. I want my children to get drenched. I want them to have the experiences where their heart is pounding because they're so nervous about walking up to someone and asking them out. But is it an essential part of the human experience? I just don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, just you describing that, it doesn't bring up a specific experience that I had that I can think of, but I know that feeling. And you've had that feeling, whether it's asking someone out or having a hard conversation at work, professionally. And yeah, more and more kids especially, but even adults, are maybe not having to do that. And it remains to be seen if that effect, but I do think, and obviously this is where the research and time will tell, but it's important to be aware of at the very least. And I would certainly encourage people to take the information that you've given us today and bring it to awareness. If you're on your phone, have some awareness, really. And it's hard because they're designed to kind of capture your attention. And I'm sure a lot of people listening, obviously, I know I'm sure you've seen the social dilemma and what's going on. And I think it's so important just to really be aware how it's affecting our personal lives and our relationships. And that's all we can really do. But I tend to be maybe more cautious of like, all right, I want to use this, and you've given us some great tools of how to use it, but then don't dive too much in. You got to get those bowling balls in and get that real life experience.
You absolutely do. And I think for me, that's really important. Like, I definitely need the bowling balls. I need them daily. One of the things that we haven't touched upon, and I'm not even sure, I touch on it a little bit in my book, but, you know, from the second most of us leave our house, we're in a touch desert. We are not allowed to touch, you know, that is, again, not necessarily just the pandemic. There are some very strict HR policies that are rightly there because, you know, mandating that we don't touch people at work. Even hugs would be inappropriate at work. And we either go to an office or we go into public spaces. People have various feelings about public displays of affection, but basically, most of us will get most of our intimate touch in our own homes. And so I'm always surprised when people are like, "Oh, the second I walk through the door, everyone is all over me." And I'm like, of course they're all over you. They were also in a touch desert, right? Your children were in a touch desert. Your partner was in a touch desert. They want to intimately touch you. They want to hug you. They want to hold your hand. And it should be we should be happy about that, because it's when that disappears that I think we'll have lost something in humanity that may be really important. So I think your hesitance to dive in with all technology is a right. Like I need it. I will say too, with my children, I really want them to have those experiences. So interacting with people in a face-to-face way. So from the time that they've been little, when we walk into a dentist appointment, I make them check in. I have them interact with a human, look them in the eye and say, I am here for my appointment. When we go to a doctor's appointment, when the doctor asks me a question, I'll look over to my child and until they answer, so that they can get accustomed to having interactions with their healthcare providers. I have them call and make appointments so they can see what it's like to talk to someone on the phone. I have them call and pay bills so they can see what that's like to talk to someone on the phone when you're paying a bill. So the more experiences we can give our children in diving deep, and I'm not saying that those are necessarily deep dives, but they're deeper than what a lot of kids are doing. The more we can do that, the more we can shape this future generation and make sure that they have the bowling balls.
Michelle, I love that. And I am going to get Stella on the phone paying my bills here. She's sick, so it might be a little early, but
It's never too early.
I think that's great. That is great. And it is something I encourage her to do. Yeah, just like, hey, they ask you your name, you know, when we're meeting new people, and she's shy and that's okay. But I kind of give her the space and time to do that. And it is so important because we do have this substitute nowadays, and it's harder to have those face-to-face interactions and the touch as well. So I think that's a great place to wrap up. I really love all the information you've given today. Before we wrap up, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online and if there's anything that we skipped over or maybe you want to emphasize, and then we'll say goodbye.
Oh, yeah, sure. So I can be reached on Instagram at Dr. Michelle Druin, and then on Twitter at Dr. M. Druin. You can reach out to me there via direct message. I'm always happy to talk. I guess to end, I mean, we really did touch upon a lot of the things that I talk about in my book, but I will say this, Chase. I mean, we know what we want really quickly. Okay, whether we're looking at art, whether we're reading a passage, whether we're looking at someone that we like, we know what we like, we know what we want very quickly. It doesn't take a lot of time to make those decisions. And the one thing that technology tends to rob us of is time. It disperses our energies towards all of these little things that may not mean much to us, either now or in the long term. So I think the biggest caution I'll leave your listeners with is to really prioritize, what do you want to spend time on doing today? What is it? Who are the people? What are the tasks? And don't divert yourself with the marbles on the pool cover by anything. Just really try to divert yourself only to the things that you know you want, you know you like. And that kind of social economizing, I think, is really the way that we can successfully navigate a digital world.
I love that. Thanks so much, Michelle. And our listeners can find all the links in the show notes and on the website, idopodcasts.com. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks a lot, Chase, and have a great day.
As always, thank you guys so much for tuning into today's episode. As always, all the links to the guest, as well as any of their recommendations, will be in the show notes page. You can find the link to that in the episode description or by going to idopodcast.com. Click on the podcast tab up at the top and you will have access to all the episodes that we've ever done. There are over 300 of them. And while you're on our website, if you haven't checked out our free 14-day happy couple challenge, we really hope you do. It's a free email challenge that we send to you. It's 14 days of fun, easy, doable challenges to help strengthen and improve your relationship. And if you're looking for something that provides a little more help with working on your relationship, whether it's improving intimacy or communication with your partner, or just bringing the spark back, we would love for you guys to check out our online course, Spark my relationship. We're offering $100 off to all of our listeners if you go to sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. We've worked with over 15 psychologists and therapists to create the real life tools and strategies that they are teaching their clients. So we wanted to give them to you. It's a self-paced online course that can be done in as little as a month or up to 3 months. You can really decide how much or how little you want to do with your partner, or maybe just yourself. So we hope you guys check that out. It's sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. Have a great day.